Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Aren't these guys beautiful? I love it. I absolutely love it. I always say it every time I come up after praise and worship. I wish I didn't have to come up. You know, just get to continue to listen to those guys. Let me start by saying thank you so much for having me here this weekend. What a joy it has absolutely been to meet so many of you and have the opportunity to share a little bit about our story and our heart and how God's moved in our life. Today they've asked me to speak specifically about vertical connections, about how we live our lives specifically in touch and staying in touch with God and the purpose that he gave to us. I'm going to start by asking you something. What if I told you that the only things you'd have in your life tomorrow when you awoke were the things that you thanked God for today?
Amen.
Okay? Think of how that would change the way you go about today, how you treat each other, what you would value, where you would spend your time. Yeah. What would you consider to be the most important things that God's given you? Perhaps your family, your health. How about your job? Would it be your home, your car, or your boat? Let me tell you a secret. God is less concerned about what you do, what you earn, what you become, what you accumulate. After all, you can't take that with you to heaven. You can't take your title to heaven. You can't take your money to heaven. You can't take your wealth, your fame, your house. And guys, I'm sorry, you can't take your favorite fishing pole. The only thing you can take to heaven is you. Okay? You, the connection you make with God, your character, your spirit, and the person you become in your life. And he wants to know if you become the person that he designed you to be. One of my favorite passages is Jeremiah 1:5. It says, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you with a purpose." You know, think about how powerful that is. Before, eons and eons and eons ago, God already loved you so much that he created you the way that you are today. Okay? And let me tell you this. God doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't make errors, okay? He doesn't create something that's flawed, and he never creates something at the wrong time. Meaning, you are special. You are special the way that you were created, the way that you are, and where you are today is not by accident. Okay? And always, always, always keep that in your heart and your mind, that you have tremendous value because of the person that made you. And for that reason alone. If you want to know what your purpose is, I always say talk to your creator. If you still can't figure it out, refer to the owner's manual. I do contend that we all start off in our life with great intention. Okay, whether we're coming out of school or we're growing up or we're getting to a milestone, I often say that we start off pursuing a passion, but so often sometimes we end up settling for a paycheck. Instead of making a life, we find ourselves all of a sudden making a living. Okay. We mistakenly think that we'll be happy with a bigger title that we have or the more money that we make. But I will tell you firsthand that true happiness comes when our actions align to our purpose. When what we're doing on a day-to-day basis is aligned to what God made us be doing. All of a sudden, the money doesn't matter, the time doesn't matter, the title doesn't matter. We find true happiness. And I contend that there's a third wheel on this. When our purpose lines up with our actions, and when our actions are being done to build the kingdom, to help other people, that truly is when we come alive. We're doing what God intended us to be doing. And I love it. I love it. I love it. And sometimes you ask, well, how do I know what my purpose is? You know, I love asking kids in particular, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know why? Because they'll say, I hear it all. Oh, I want to be a fireman. I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a dancer. I want to be a football player. I want to sing in the choir. What's beautiful about that? Nobody has told them what they can't do yet. Nobody's told them you're not smart enough, you're not fast enough, you're not pretty enough. You see, the story we begin to believe determines the life that we live. Okay? The story we begin to believe determines the life we live. Not the story that God gave us, but the story that we believe. There's a recent Harvard study that showed by the time that we're 17 years old, on average in the United States, we've heard, "No, you can't," an average of 150,000 times. Conversely, we've heard, "Yes, you can," only 5,000 times. That's 30 no's to one yes. That creates a powerful, powerful belief of what we can't do in life. The leading reason people fail to reach their potential is due to low self-esteem. They don't believe in themselves, and they don't believe specifically in the greatness that God intended for them. And I tell you this, rest assured, if you put a low level of self-esteem on yourself, the world's not going to raise the price. It all starts in here. What you believe, what you tell yourself, no matter what the enemy tells you, your value never diminishes, never can be diminished because of the one who made you. No matter what the enemy tells you, and they will tell you lies. They will tell you over and over and over, especially today, because there's so many ways to get to your heart and to your mind that are from people, and you remind yourself, these are from people who don't love you and don't care about you. Find those who do truly love you, who lift you up and tell you what you can accomplish and how great you can be, at no matter what it is. That's the great irony. It doesn't have to be building an orphanage or a library. It could be being great at touching a life or being a parent or influencing others. It's just the fact of being great because God made you that way. What holds us back from pursuing our dreams? Okay. You asked me back in the days, I used to be in healthcare and I ran a big company. And I would challenge myself, am I truly living my passion? And the answer was no. And I would ask myself, and I ask so many people who come and talk to me, what holds you back from it? And it's amazing. I would hear the same excuses that I would give. Oh, well, I've got a great job. I've got a great income. I'm comfortable. We're secure. And back then you'd ask me, well, my dream was to run a restaurant one day. Even though I was a healthcare executive. It's crazy, right? You know, 7 or 8 out of 10 restaurants fail. I was 40-something years old in life. My opportunity had already passed. I got 2 kids in school and huge mortgage and everything else. You know, and all these restaurants fail. You hear what's common thread in all of this? It's fear. Fear is a tangible weapon the enemy uses to keep us away from the purpose that we were designed. 2 Timothy 1:7, for God did not give us a spirit of fear, but one of power, love, and self-control. So if God did not give us fear, who did? The enemy. And you know how he uses it? The onset of fear is worry, and the onset of worry is doubt. And that's where he plants the seeds. We start to doubt that we could do something, doubt how great we could be, doubt what even God intended us to be. And if we water that seed, I always use the analogy, you can plant lots of seeds, okay? But the only one that's going to grow is the one that you focus on, the one you put light on, okay? If you focus on the negatives and you focus on the things, you know, your problems and your drawbacks, guess what? That's going to grow and fester in your life and in your mind. If you focus on your strengths and you focus on why God has you here and how much people around you do love you, that grows. And that internal love, it spreads. It goes to everybody else. What you focus on will absolutely grow. Now, sometimes we're going down a path, and I do say that one of our biggest enemies is comfort. Okay? Complacency. Complacency is a dangerous, dangerous place to be because you don't want it to change. Okay? Even if you're not happy. You think about how many people go through life unhappy, but they're secure, they've got things. And sometimes something has to happen in your life to wake you up. And I'm just going to tell my story. Everybody's story is different. And mine came from a phone call back in 2004. At the time, I was running a pharmaceutical company. And on my desk, I had a phone. It had two lines. One line was going to my assistant, and one line was a direct line, and only five or six people knew the direct line. And I'll never forget this Friday, okay? Phone rang on my direct line, and I picked it up fully intending and expecting to talk to one of those five or six people. And it wasn't any of them. And I'll never forget this call. It was a lady, and she was crying. And I remember her, the words she said. She says, Mr. Rivers, she says, I'm so sorry to hear about your daughter. Now, my daughter was a kindergartner at the time, and I said, what's wrong? What happened to Cammy? And she said her tumor. She said her terminal brain tumor. Now, I hung up the phone, and it took me about 20 minutes to get a hold of Monica, my wife. And God used those 20 minutes to make me realize that no matter what my title was, no matter how many people, no matter pharmacists, no matter how many healthcare people worked for us, no matter how much money we had, that wasn't going to fix this problem. You know, that's the definition of a true problem. When you face something in your life that money can't fix, that's a problem. That's a problem. And sometimes I do contend that God brings us to that point to realize, help us realize that He's the only solution. You know, that's that old saying that sometimes you don't realize that all that you need in life is Jesus until all you have left in life is Jesus. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's tough, but it's not a bad thing. I got a hold of Monica, and thank God, literally, it wasn't Cameron. But that 20 minutes that he orchestrated changed my life. It moved my heart so much. I remember saying to Monica, we're going to find out who this little girl is. And she said, how are you going to find out? I said, I don't know. And what are we going to do? I don't know, but we're going to find out. Now, I'll tell you this, okay? We found that little girl. She wasn't in Cameron's class. She didn't go to the same school Cameron went to. We didn't go to the same church as their family. We didn't even live in the same neighborhood or the same city. There was no reason that that phone call came to my desk that day. But I know this, it wasn't a mistake, okay? Because the words that the lady said were, Mr. Rivers, I'm so sorry to hear about your daughter. And I'll tell you something really kind of freaky. To this day, we don't know who that phone call came from. But that call changed the trajectory of my life completely. We found this beautiful family, and so, you know, I laugh at what we were doing. We thought we'd give them drugs and health care and things like that. And then one day, about 2 or 3 weeks into it, I realized they don't need more nursing. They don't need more care. They need money, what they're going through. So I picked up the phone, and I called the husband, and his name was John. And I said, John, I said, let me write you a check. And he said, absolutely not. Won't have anything to do with it. And we went back and forth, and I said, okay, if you change your mind, let me know. And I hung up the phone, and this was one of the first times I really felt a push from God. And the push was very simple. Don't give up. Just trust me. And I picked up the phone. I dialed it, called him back. I didn't know what I was going to say. And I was making it up on the spot. I said, hey, John, it's me again. He said, yeah, I know. I just told you no. And I said, I was making up stuff. I said, hey, I like to barbecue. You know, I got a little smoker in my backyard. Why don't we do a fundraiser for little Megan, was her name, at your church. We'll do whenever you want to. You invite anybody you want. You know, I'll put some pork butts on there, and we'll do some pulled pork and some stuff like that. And, you know, I can cook for at least 20 people or something like that. Calls his wife, calls him back, and says, okay, but it needs to be 10 days from now because little Megan's going to go into chemo. I said, no worries. You know, just give me, you know, a couple 48 hours in advance. We'll get it done. 450 people RSVP'd for this event that was coming 10 days later, okay? I didn't have the equipment, I didn't have the know-how, I didn't have the storage. I was a healthcare executive. You know, I didn't know how to do this. This was a backyard project that I just loved to cook, you know? And that's when Jesus, and that's when God showed up. He sometimes, just like Gideon, he brings you to a point, okay, where you can't do it by yourself on purpose. And it was just amazing. People started lining up and started coming into our lives and helping, and it just kept getting momentum every day. And I remember one day Monica called me up, and she says, our office was up in Lake Mary. She says, you better get home. And I said, what for? She says, oh, you'll see. So I raced down I-4, and I remember trying to pull into our driveway, and the son of a gun, you ever seen those huge smokers that are on a big trailer? You know, the big barrels? There was one from here to the fan over there in our driveway, blocking the whole driveway, and it had a yellow sticky on it. And it simply said, hey, John, heard you might need this. Call me when you're done. And you know, the funny thing was, I never met the guy until like 3 or 4 years later when he came into the smokehouse. But that was just one example of things, just refrigerators, and things just started showing up. And I learned just a great lesson about community, you know, and relations and connectivity and how you can move a mountain when everybody comes together for a single cause. And 10 days later, we fed all those 450 people, and you know, we raised lots of money for this beautiful little girl, and nobody got sick. So I said, this is great. And I'll never forget that night. I was laid out. I was, because you know, you work behind a desk, you don't do a lot of physical activity, you know? And Monica comes over to me, and she's poking me. She says, how you doing there, big guy? I said, oh, I'm so alive. She says, no. You're not looking so alive. I said, I want to do this. And I couldn't articulate what it was, but you know what it was? I took my passion, okay? That purpose that God gave me for the love of cooking, it became my activity, soon to be my occupation, and I did it to help others. It was that alignment, and no matter how much money I was making over here or how much, it didn't matter anymore. That's what I wanted to do. And for the next 4 years, out of our garage, we ran our barbecue ministry. And anytime schools or kids or churches called and they needed money, if we wrote them a check, we would. But if they let me, I said, well, I have a smoker. I said, I'll come and I'll cook for you, and we'll raise money, and everything goes for your cause. And they would say yes. And over the years, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And Monica says, you're just doing this so you get bigger smokers. year over year. That, in between those 4 years, the disparity of who I was Monday through Friday at work and who I was on Saturday and Sunday in ministry became so vast, I couldn't live with the lie. I could not live because I loved doing this. And I felt like I was cheating the very company that I helped build. And so I retired. I resigned. And Monica asked me the same question my boss did at the time. What are you going to do? And this was an important part. I said, I don't know. The same thing that I said when Monica asked what we're going to do for that little girl. I don't know. But I knew I had to step into this. And there's some lessons in that. Sometimes God's not going to tell us all the details. He's just going to give us the prompt. He's going to put it on our heart. Our job is to say yes. And I do contend he blesses us and protects us by not telling us all the details. Because had I known the perils and the challenges that lied ahead in opening a restaurant in 2009, I would have cowered. I would have said no. He loved me so much he didn't tell me that. Our job is to say yes and step into it. And that's exactly what I did. So after those 4 years, that last year in the garage in the ministry, because I was retired, I had lots of time to do more cooking. We served, I think, over 40,000 people in the ministry. And, we always tell people, okay, we moved into a restaurant. No, we didn't. Monica kicked us out of the house because we were making such a mess. And we found this little teeny place. Anybody ever go to our first little store on Fairbanks? Oh, God bless you. You park in one of 11 parking spots, you know, that we had. Do you know that wasn't supposed to be a restaurant? That was supposed to be a commissary that we were going to run the ministry out of. And people started lining up, and all of a sudden it became a restaurant. And I looked at this little teeny place. Now, this is an important part of the journey. I looked at this little, it's only, what, 1,150 square feet. It was a Just Breaks. And I built pharmacies all over the country. I launched drugs all over the world. How hard could it be to convert this little teeny place into a restaurant, right? Oh, my Lord. Let me tell you this. When you step into your calling, okay, into what God intended you to be doing, you will wake up the enemy. He does not want you there. You know why? Because you are going to make an impact on the kingdom when you start doing what God built you to be doing. And sure enough, man, the problem started the moment we went into this. Okay? It was supposed to cost us $380,000 to build, total and open, and it was only supposed to take 4 or 5.5 months. I literally have the original quote framed at my office. 6.5 months into the project, over $500,000 of our family capital put into it, okay? The market, does anybody remember what happened in 2009? I tried to block it out. This is a permanent scar, okay? My contractor walks off the job, leaves me hanging completely, okay? Says there's no way that he can finish it for what we want. Okay, and the market dropped so much, all the money that we had in savings and mutuals and investments was down like 60-70% like the rest of the country. We built this great big beautiful house and we didn't like a lot of debt, so we put cash and capital into it. We were upside down in that. Okay, after 20 years of building a career to become a CEO and be able to retire from it, all of a sudden we found ourselves 60 days away from running out of cash. And you ask the question, God, hello, I stepped into doing what you asked me to do. Why is this happening? And that's the second piece of it, is perseverance. Follow your passion, but boy, you better be ready to fight. It's going to be pretty, Jesus never promised it would be easy. Matter of fact, he told us the opposite. And I do contend this. You know, when we run into challenges, you know, it's natural for us to ask, God, why are you doing this to me? And what I've learned over the years is the discipline to ask, God, what are you trying to show me? What are you trying to teach me? If you truly believe that everything that happens to you in life, you know, God is making you stronger, okay? And he's making you stronger and he's bringing you closer to him so that he can give you more to build more of a kingdom impact. But you got to take those steps along the way. And sometimes those little challenges, you think about your life, you know, one of the hardest challenges and one of the hardest seasons you ever went through. Well, look at where you're at. You made it. You're here. You look back on some of those like, oh yeah, I don't want to do it again, but I did it. And you know what? You probably had another challenge after that and another challenge after that. I said it earlier this morning on the podcast. You know, there's a theologian, Kierkegaard, 19th century. He said that we tend to look at our life, things tend to happen in our life as we look back, but we tend to understand why things happen to our life as we look back on them. We might not understand why things are happening to us on a day-to-day basis, but there's always a reason. And if you truly, truly trust that your maker loves you and is taking care of you, you know, he's never going to put anything in front of us that he already hasn't armed us to overcome. And I fall back on that all the time. And I promise you, even when you get to this next level, there's just more challenges and more. That's just the world we live in. You know, perseverance is so strong. We're all going to experience storms in our life. And the thing that I always encourage people is, you know, the storm itself is going to happen. We just have to be prepared. We have to have that solid foundation. And something I wrote a long time ago, storms are inevitable, but the anchors that we set are immovable. And if we set that anchor in solid ground, no matter how strong that storm is, we're going to make it through at the end of the day. Well, I will tell you this. Right as we were at the very bottom, we're about to run out of cash, I get a call from my old boss, and it was a temptation. And he said, John, we're going to buy 3 pharmacies. We're going to put the assets together here in Orlando, and we'd like you to be the CEO of it. And thank goodness for my wife. This was on a Friday. I said, I'm going to call you back on Monday and let you know after we pray about it this weekend. And we prayed about it, and Monica told me, she said, you know, if you really believe that this restaurant crazy dream of yours is what God wants you to be doing, I will stand by your side, okay, even if we lose everything. And I am so thankful for her and her faith and her strength, because that carried me through. And I passed on that opportunity. And if you look at the end of the book, 90 days later, that conglomeration, that opportunity fell apart. The deal fell through. It wasn't an opportunity, it was a temptation. And had I stepped into it, I would have lost out on the blessings that God had intended. And literally, the week that I said no, that Monday, God stepped in and he filled those holes. And it taught me a lesson that there is balance between obedience and blessings. And Isaiah talks about it an awful lot. You're going to be tested. And as you obey, the blessings will come. But you have to obey first. I got 2 phone calls, okay? The first phone call came from a friend of mine who had a Bible study up in Longwood area. And that Tuesday in particular, there's one of the guys in the Bible study that goes down Fairbanks, gets his coffee, goes to I-4 and goes up there. And he goes to the Bible study and he's ashen white. Okay, he's sweaty, he's shaking, and my friend says to him, his name was Brad, what's wrong, Brad? He says, I had the most weird, bizarre experience today. I was coming down Fairbanks, and I go past this little teeny construction site, and I swear God talked to me, spoke to me, and my friend asked him, what did he say? He says, well, the guy who's building this is in trouble. He's doing my will, and he needs your help. And my friend running the Bible study knew me, knew how much trouble I was, knew he didn't have much help. He says, he absolutely needs your help. So the guy's name was Brad Watkins, okay? Brad Watkins was a partner in a construction company called Friedrich Watkins. Friedrich Watkins had 2 clients in town, Disney and SeaWorld, okay? Friedrich Watkins got me to opening. Remember I said we were down to 60 days of cash? He got me to opening in 59 days later of the 60. We were down to 1 day of cash left. The second phone call came from that weekend, and I missed the call, which I don't understand how I did. We were in the truck. We were coming back from the beach because the beach was free, and we spent a lot of time there. And the kids were in the back seat, and I looked down on my phone, and all of a sudden I had a message. I said, that's really weird. The phone didn't ring. And I'll never forget it. It was on Bluetooth and the speakers were on. And I played it. And I'll never forget that message. Mr. Rivers, he said, this is Dan Cathy. He says, I work at Chick-fil-A. I'm like, you don't work at Chick-fil-A, you own Chick-fil-A. He says, I just had your brisket and your sauce. He said, that was the best thing I ever had. And he says, I really felt God has told me I'm supposed to reach out to you and help you. Out of the complete blue. Dan stepped into my life. And you know what he gave me? One of the greatest gifts and one of the greatest lessons. He didn't give me money. He didn't give me equipment. He gave me encouragement. He used his experience, and he was available to me anytime I call 15 years ago to this very, very day. And the lesson that he taught me is that the one thing that we all have is our time and our experience. And we can bless people around us with that tremendous, tremendous gift. It has nothing to do with money. Nothing. Nothing. You don't have to get them a job. You don't have to open. Just encourage them. And I tell my team every day, every person that walks in that door that you greet, you have a chance to impact their life just by the way you treat them. The words you use, the sincerity in your heart, the way that you look at them, how you compliment them. You never know. All those lifts up. It makes somebody a difference in their life. It was the day of opening, October 26 in 2009. We were literally down to 1 day of cash. I had 12 employees and myself. We didn't have any money to advertise. We didn't have any money to promote. We couldn't do anything fancy whatsoever. We all stood, I remember that morning, in the little entry area, and we prayed, we held hands and prayed, and I told the team, I said, I don't know what's going to happen after this week. I can't promise that we'll even have enough money to go forward, but God got us here, and we're just going to trust He's going to carry it. And we unlocked the doors at 11 o'clock that morning, and that's when it began. People started coming in. At first, it was our friends who knew the challenges that we were facing. And then it was all these people that we served in the ministry those 4 years came back to support us. And after that, it was people, I didn't know who they were. They just started coming in and coming in and coming in droves. We were supposed to do, I think, like a $300, Dan told me we would do per day in sales. We averaged $3,500 a day that first year. God continued to pour into our business over and over. And to this day, I'm convinced, now that we have 30 some odd units, we're blessed because we keep that ministry that we started off in the center of our business. And as long as we continue to keep God in our business and we build a business around Him, we don't try to force it in, then God will continue to lead us and to bless us. Let me lead you with this, one of my very favorite sayings. I paraphrase an author named Miriam Williamson. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure and capable of achieving all that we are called to do. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us the most. I pray each and every one of you listen to that prompt. And you do not listen to all the shortcomings and all the fear and all the doubt and the worry. You trust that God made you special. Every one of you. He made you beautiful because of who you are. And He made you capable of achieving all that He's put on your heart and you're able to dream about. All right. Thank you, guys. God bless you.